Hello and welcome to another episode of Marlboro Softball Talk Live. I'm your host, Scott Seidenberg. It is Tuesday, August 25th, as the Marlboro softball season rolls on to another Wednesday of scheduled games, some exciting matchups, and teams starting to really come into their own here at this point in the season. A lot of teams had doubleheaders last weekend. Congratulations to those of you who swept your doubleheaders, and apologies to those who did not win on Sunday. To help me talk about Sunday's games, and in particular, the greatest play that you will ever see in a slow pitch softball game and a sweep of a doubleheader, and to preview one of the marquee matchups of Wednesday night, he is Cowboy Mike Farese. Cowboy, what's up?
How we doing?
All right. I noticed that you just wrote MF on your video screen instead of spelling your full name out so people can see it's Farese.
Farese.
But MF could also stand for motherfucker. So, we are.
It's pretty fitting.
It is pretty fitting. That is you. Now, before we talk about the doubleheader on Sunday and preview Wednesday night's games, the greatest play in slow pitch softball history occurred on Sunday.
Yeah, I was awestruck.
I don't think I've ever seen it happen before.
Yeah.
I've certainly never been a part of it before, but for the first time in, I think, Marlboro softball history, something happened.
Yeah.
A lot of people might not know, but luckily, thanks to Kyle Dunleavy's mother, we have video of said incident. And here it is. That is a swing and miss strike one.
I was coaching third. I couldn't even believe it.
Now
it looks like you're instructing someone on how to swing. Like, this is the perfect swing. It's majestic. It's perfect. Now, and then the ball is behind you.
Yes. And that was a crow hop attempt to try to go to right field. It did not go well.
And now you're like, let's get back to basics. I can't believe that just happened.
So I'd like to ask, for those who might not know, like, what do you think happens next? What happens next on the next pitch?
I mean, if I were gonna guess, I'd say you just go back to your basic swing. But I was there, so I know what happened.
Let's see what happens.
It's so funny. You sent me this video and I watched it three times. It's so fucking funny.
That is a swinging strikeout in underhand softball.
I've never seen you swing and miss. At best, I've seen you like hit a little, chintzy one off the side of the bat that, like, maybe went past the cat. I've never seen that, let alone twice.
That is a swing and miss strikeout.
Miraculous.
I mean, the only person, I think, in slow pitch softball history to homer and strike out swinging in game.
Well, I got to say, you batting after the heroics of Chase Sandler is fucking you up a little bit. Like, he comes up and kills the ball, and you're like, well, I'm going to make sure they don't forget about Scott Seidenberg. And then, so you had what? A triple, a home run, and then that, right?
Yes. It should have been two home runs because and we might need clarification on this from the league. The ball went over the green fence at East Francis.
The height of it was over, but there was a tree.
It hit the tree over the green fence and came back. And the umpire said that that's just all you can get. The tree is in play. You got to run it out. I thought it should have been an automatic home run. It's over the green fence. As Ed Fradkin would argue on Union Hill right, if it hits the netting, it should be a home run because it's over the fence. But we don't count that as a home run, and I guess we don't count hitting the tree over the green fence at East Francis as a home run.
Well, he also has issues. That ump has some, he brought up, he said, I can't take steps leading up to the rubber.
You're really not supposed to, yeah.
But I'm not like building momentum. It's just something I do.
Yeah.
I'm not like I'm taking a running start to throw it.
I get it. I get it. His also his
running start. You gotta go 12 feet.
That umpire's out of play rules are also bizarre anyway, because like he's different than everybody else on that field. But yes.
He also said to me at the top of the ninth, he said, not to mess you up, but you're pitching a shutout. And then we let up one in the ninth.
That's pretty good. As the question gets posed, you're a three. Yeah, I am. And I struck out swinging. So home run and strikeout swinging in the same game. That's pretty much what you're going to get. You want to see it one more time? I'll show it to you one more time. Why not? Here it is. Two strikes on the batter. What's he going to do? Reset. Maybe hit a line drive. Maybe a ground ball. Nope. Still swinging for the fences. And swings and miss. And I will tell you that I never even saw the ball. What are you going to do?
Francis, there are times you have that the sun is coming in. I will say it was not that sunny of a day. So.
Not that sunny of a day. As the next comment come in and congratulating you on your write-ups, the most incredible write-ups, recaps that they have seen. And let's talk about the
recap. It was a little weak. It was nothing. It wasn't. Sometimes you feel it. Sometimes you don't, you know?
But let's talk about this. In game one, where that strikeout did occur, it was life after bombing blitz. What was it like playing against your boys? I mean, this is
it's tough. I mean, if you look at my lineups for the past 3 years, it's, you know, it's obvious. Like I try to keep around my guys, and you know, I love Eric and Richie, and they balance each other. Like Eric is all talent and professionalism, and Richie is like talent, but you got to harness it in, and sometimes you got to like corral him in, and. You know, I'm always trying to get him, regardless of the fact that when I'm pitching, the whole time he's in my ear, like, "Mike, you suck, dude, you suck." But I love him. He's like a foster child to me. So, it was great seeing them. Like I said in the recap, their jerseys are. I mean, you don't play with for me, your jerseys aren't going to be as good.
Understood. But,
I thought draft day. I thought that was a really strong looking team. I still think they are a very strong looking team, and kudos to. Goddard's brother. I think he pitched a good game coming, you know, I mean, I heard he had a rough first out.
Yeah. But say what you will about the way that Jeff pitched that game. We scored 8 runs and all 8 runs came from Dunleavy, me and Chase. So 3 batters accounted for the entire scoring of the team. That's not a badly pitched game, you know?
Yeah. 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 He kept our whatever it was 6 through 12 at bay for the whole game. I mean, honestly, there were maybe like 3 hits after Pat, who's our number 5 hitter.
Yeah, it's a good one. That Steinberg team's good right now. They're 8-4 on the year. They won the second game of their doubleheader. We went on to win our second game of the doubleheader against a LaPine team that is 2-10.
I can't. I wrote the prediction for them, and LaPine's team on paper. Of the ones that I wrote about, I think I had Marone and LaPine like neck and neck. Mm-hmm. And yes, there have been some replacements or whatever, but I don't think they lost out in replacements for the most part. Like you look at that outfield, they had going across. They had Tim George, Getz, Roland, and Lapomi. Mm-hmm. Like, any of those guys could have been the left center fielder. So they have like left center fielder caliber across. The infield, Infante, I mean, you had, what's his face, Yigdal at third. But either way, like, Infante could cover all of that anyway. Spotto's a solid enough second baseman, and the pop that he adds in the lineup. But, I mean, I guess when you're flat, you're flat. And they came out flat, but I could picture them winning the play-in game and then going on a monster tear.
They can because they have talent. But it's just – it's unreal because their top three is as good as any top three in the league. They just haven't really put it together up and down the lineup.
Yeah. I was on a team with Spotto. It was actually a LaPine team, and our top three were top four rather were who the hell was it? It was Spotto, Conti, mm-hmm. and Arlens, and we started off 0-8, and then we got into a nice groove, and we didn't end with a winning record, but I mean we ended up winning like 6-7 in a row at some point.
My rookie year, playing for Lapine, and I was a fill-in. I filled in.
That's still on paper. That is the most. That is the most unbelievable team on paper.
It was me, Callow, Spotto, and Goddard at the top four, and that was Goddard, Spotto, and me were all rookies. We were three rookies. All three of us nominated for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, our
same exact team, and we.
But even like your mid-level guys were strong too.
Oh, we had a tremendous team.
You had, I think, Artie DeMarco, who had like a breakout year. You had Herm, who was always like the elite pitcher, and then you got him at like a bargain price, I think.
Yeah, and Denny was still, you know, hitting the ball back then. So that was
he was only in like his late 70s at that. Like 10 years ago.
Anything else stand out at you on the in terms of the standings before we get to Wednesday's games? You know, I look at Pollock at 9-2, and some people might question, are they really the best team in the league? Are they really this good? And my answer to that is that they're just sound. You know, like Matt and Mitch build a team the way that you would build a successful baseball team. You start up the middle, right? I mean, when you build a successful baseball team, you go up the middle, catcher, shortstop, center fielder. And they Martino and Perugin, one of the best infielders and arguably the best outfielder. That's an incredible foundation to a team.
Yeah, I was with the Pollocks for the first like 4 out of 5 years that I was in the league. We won it all our first year. And early on, their mentality was very like offense based. Like, oh, we'll get a bunch of guys, we'll get the best players we can and figure out the defense later. And since then there's like the Infante era where they built a sound defense. I don't know. I know Mitch writes the blog and you know, when they're ranked high, it's like, oh, it's like, you know, the coach's son is batting himself first. But I thought at the end of that draft, the fact they have Martino and Perugin, they have two solid ones. And Martino, like he's incredible defensively.
Yeah.
Like if he bats 400 on the nose, he's still a first round second base shortstop, in my opinion. And then Palladino was a first rounder only a few years ago. And then to have Perugin, who's always been a first rounder, I think top to bottom offense, defense, there's, you know, that's a very sound team. And so I'm not surprised where they are at all. I'm surprised where some other teams are, but I'm very surprised where Jacoby is. I'm very surprised. Obviously, like we mentioned Lapine, but Bykovsky's team, we saw them in a scrimmage and we saw them at first game of the season. But I mean, to look at where they got the Pargaments, to look where they have Jeff Turner, who's like a killer, the defense is incredible. I thought there was no, when we played them, there was no stop at them, probably because I was pitching them, but I don't know. But that they're underperforming, and I don't want to face them in the playoffs.
And a team that we face on Wednesday night, Wallman, look out. They've won 5 in a row and are now starting to look like the team that everybody thought they were going to be when we put together the preseason predictions.
I'm surprised by their defensive shift of moving Wallman and Younger. Here's a question. I mean, maybe I'm a layman. I've known Younger to be a rock solid second baseman forever, like an elite second baseman. The move. So I'm surprised the move wasn't swap the two of them. Like have Younger go to short and Wallman go to second. Take some pressure off of Wallman and have Younger play short. As opposed to Becker coming out of nowhere.
But apparently Todd felt that his strength would be better in the outfield and Becker would be better in the infield, and plugging two holes at once, I guess, was the decision there. We'll see it firsthand tomorrow night. That is a dangerous offensive team. Yeah. And like I mentioned,
it's a very modest team. You know, like there's no like ego or nothing cocky about that team. I don't know.
So what do we do? Do we walk Becker? Like, is that how we prepare for this game? I don't know.
At Union Hill, probably. But we'll see what happens. We'll see who their walk guy is.
Yeah, Lugos is not going to hit it out because home runs aren't sexy. But Becker would absolutely, you know, we should probably walk him. And we'll take our luck with the rest of the
line. They should walk you as you are looking to avenge that strikeout.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's all forgotten.
Yeah. And I have to also catch up to Chase, who has two more home runs than me, which is not Good.
Chase is something else. And I think what stands out about him is not only is he like killing the ball, but he's a hair under batting 700.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like he's just like we play at Union Hill. He racks up some home runs. He's hitting on an open field. He's hitting line drives that are going in. You know, he's a smart
MVP candidate right now.
Yes.
Absolute MVP candidate right now. Offensive player of the year candidate right now. And coming into his own as a very good second baseman.
I think so too. Yeah. We're going to see him. He's going to have a full, you know, Gluck has, you know, a family thing to go to. So we're going to see a full night of Chase at short.
Yep.
And I'm confident he's going to do a great job. We also might see the return of Frank Lucanti after a lot of health hiccups. We might see him come out from out of the woods with maybe Eye of the Tiger playing or You're the Best Around. And,
making do the Kenny Powers entrance from
he's got to do all of that, bat lefty and ground out to first, and then be like, it's like 6 years for this.
Yeah, we'll get him a runner as well. Okay, yeah. the other games tomorrow night, you have Lombardi against Goldfarb. I say it every week, but the Justin Brock replacement for Goldfarb just makes that team so much better. Lombardi, meanwhile, swept a doubleheader on Sunday. And, for people that thought that they were going to be a pushover, not so much. Yeah.
Well, I think Lombardi, when he said Mike Conte, and this is no offense to Mike Conte, and if you want, to show my love for Conte, I'll smoke a Newport right after this. But when he picked Conte over Martino, mm-hmm. because Martino is such an early first round pick, and was like, oh, and I think that kind of just put ideas in people's head, like, oh, he doesn't know how to pick a team, whatever. But you look at the top, like we scrimmage them, and I don't want to face Conte at Union Hill or anywhere. Rather, I don't want to face Joel and Evan Rosenthal is a powerhouse. Losing Brock Hoare is huge.
Yeah.
Because whereas, he's not playing a key defensive spot anymore, but the hitting is undeniable. But I do think the replacements for some of the other guys might have been a little bit of a step up for Lombardi. Justin Brock coming back is huge, but I think at Union Hill, I would take Lombardi in that game.
Yeah, I would lean with you there. This is a great game because you got two of the top teams in the standings. You got Marone and Harris right now. Marone sitting there on top of his division at 8-3. Harris just in second in the National at 9-3. Good game going on at the same time as the Wallman-Faris game. So two good games at 6:30 tomorrow night.
Yeah, that Marone team, when we played them, like even though there were points that we weren't that far behind, just looking at that lineup, when you're on the mound looking at that lineup, you feel like it felt like we were miles away.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, we're down four. And I'm like, I thought it was 40. But it's just everywhere you look on that team, like Brad Rendell has been hitting 500 forever. He's their nine. Wayne Sherman, you know, is a big time hitter, even though regardless of how late he got him. So, I mean, there's just killers throughout that whole lineup. Jared Goldberg's a bargain where he is. And at Union Hill, I wouldn't want to face them. However, that Harris team is built for Union Hill. I will say the edge, in my opinion, I think the edge goes to Marone. I think they got good momentum going. I think, you know, I think it's just a well-rounded team. I like that
Amadeo. Yeah.
I'm Ferrarese. So I should get the only other Guinea in this league's name right. But
well, how about
a slight edge, but I see it as being like 18-15.
And how about this? The rare Wednesday night double dip as the Marone party with all their fans will stay at Union Hill right to take on Bykowski.
Yeah, at Union Hill, I think I would give the edge to Marone again. But I think when this season's over, all said and done, Bykowski is going to be a huge team in this league. He's going to go far in the playoffs.
Yeah, they always are. At the two games at Municipal, Steinberg against Fradkin. That Steinberg team, we obviously saw what they can do on Sunday. We shut their offense down, but then their offense bounces back with a big win. So they're kind of like Jekyll and Hyde, where they could score 14 runs or they can score one. Fradkin team, who we've seen give up a lot of runs this year, I would favor the Steinberg offense.
I think if that was a Union Hill game, I think it would be different, but I do. I thought Fradkin's team, looking on paper, was too much offense, not enough defense, but I really like Joe Tracy, obviously, I love, and Jimmy Murphy on the field adds a nice defense to that team. That Binder kid, I think, is like a season away from being, you know, like a second round pick. And I think he's got a lot of potential there. But on an open field like that, I picture them taking Eric and moving him from short to right field when the two big guns are up.
Yeah.
Keeping him at bay. And I think the speed of the bomb and blitz and Jurassic, like, even though like the bomb and blitz between the two of them, they got one hit off me, mm-hmm. You know, that's probably the intimidation, like facing someone that's, you know, cared for them and nurtured them and really like reined them in for so long that they were just didn't know what to do.
You're right.
And Mrs. Bomb and Blitz said how much she missed me, which, you know, was heartfelt, but we had a game to play. But I do think Evan Steinberg is still a great hitter, and so is Jurassic. So those guys hit well, and I think if you get those guys going and Goddard going and then the two and Eric and Richie kick in, then I think that team is unstoppable. I do see them winning, especially because it's at Municipal.
And then the final game at Municipal, La Rocca against Jacoby. La Rocca beat us on that Municipal field.
Yeah.
It really is like I can't stand that field. It's just
– yeah. Well, you know, the lights are on. They're a lot older, but there's a glare to it, and it's like hazy almost. I don't know. I felt like I was at like a dead show, but there's like I don't know. Like when you look, I don't know. Like pitches coming in, you almost like you have to. It's a weird feel when the ball is in the air. I like that La Rocca team, and I know you've said it a lot. Is I know Frank gave up what everyone thought was giving up the farm to get his guys, but it's just like you said, I love the Brooms. I played with the Carlins. I love playing with them. It's just a very well-rounded teams of guys who all know their role and kick in and know when to, you know, swing for the fences and know when to, you know, put it in play. And it's just, that's a great team. So I like them for that game. Jacoby's team though, I think draft day, I think he got a nice pick in Juska. And, you know, Grenice is obviously a bargain as a three since Joe Mamone, honestly, I mean, he's a good looking guy, but I mean, he's kind of like an early three, no late two.
So you just swap him and Grenice and they're fine.
It's like, oh shit, but we get the commissioner. I'll take him earlier. I guess, I don't know. But, yeah. And they've obviously lost some guys this year, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so this might be an obvious answer, but is there one team right now that you look at that you would say, hey, we just got seeded against them in a playoff matchup, and I don't want to face them right now? And this could change.
Anybody or who right now we're the seventh seed.
Correct. And
if the season were to end today, I think we're close to facing Bykovsky, and that's what I would not like. Just like how last year – and I think we talked about this last year. I think
we had to face the Brocks, and that
we were 9-9. We were 9-9, and we're like, "Hey, let's win this thing out." And then we won four in a row. We ended up 13-9, so we got a higher seed. But the Brocks, because Justin showed up periodically or whatever, they were such a low seed that we faced them, and it was the worst possible seed we could have had this season. Based on where we are now, I don't want to face Bykovsky, who I think is closest in range of who we might end up against. But, you know, obviously 5 games left, there's a lot that can happen.
Yeah, so much can happen. And really what we've seen this year is everyone has the talent to beat any team. I know that's, you know, Chef's at 1-10, Lapine's at 2-10, but both of those teams, having played both of them, we know that both of those teams can easily win games.
Yeah, I mean, who else is slated? So I think also Goldfarb and who else are slated to be in the play-in games?
The playing game right now would be Chef, Lapine, Goldfarb, and Apple.
Okay. So, I mean, like Lapine, I predicted to be at like, I don't know, like 14-8 or something like that. So then being, but also playing game, anything can happen in any one game. So yeah. We could see Shefkin coming out, you know, victorious in a play-in game. And next thing you know, going a few rounds, who knows?
Yeah, and then, you know, it's gonna be tight because right now, you know, there's only a couple of games separating a whole bunch of teams. Dude, we're 7-5. We're only three games. We're three losses away from being in the play-in game. So,
yeah.
A lot of things can change. But what doesn't change is the entertainment value that you bring to this league and to our team every single Wednesday and Sunday. So I thank you for that. And I thank you for being my guest here on our Tuesday night edition of Marlboro Softball Talk.
All right. I'm just hoping you make contact this morning.
I'll try. Yeah. All right. There he is, Cowboy Mike Ferraris. The name correctly. I'm Scott Seidenberg. Thanks for listening and watching to another episode of Marlboro Softball Talk. Good luck. And if you're coming out Wednesday night, I will see you at the field, maybe with some pizza, maybe with some beers, some fruity beers, because that's the kind of stuff I like, or some White Claws, because maybe beer is not feminine enough for me. But I will see you at the field on Wednesday. Good luck, everyone. I'll talk to you next time Friday with a special Friday episode of Marlboro Softball Talk Live, a live show with multiple guests that you do not want to miss, because some of them are going to be guys that you absolutely want to hear from. Talk to you then.